That's the greatness of America. That's the greatness of California. People putting everything on the line for riches and new beginnings.
California, the largest economy in the United States, would rank fifth in the world if it were a sovereign nation. Today, Ballard Partners' Anthony Williams has a one-on-one conversation with California Governor Gavin Newsom. The former mayor of San Francisco, lieutenant governor, and business leader, once described as a social liberal and fiscal watchdog. Today, Newsom is going to use that experience in confronting some of the state's and the nation's biggest challenges. As a former college baseball pitcher, Newsom knows what it's going to take. He's got to throw a lot of strikes. From Ballard's new studio in West Hollywood, California, a special edition of 13th and Park.
We give you information, not a panic attack.
I mean, look what's going on. I mean, my God.
This was it. My kids were gonna die.
That time is gone forever.
This is the biggest story in America.
We weren't prepared for this.
Don't you want to speak truth to power?
Toughest thing I ever had to do.
Governor Newsom. Welcome to 13th and Park.
It's good to be here. I'm glad to be out here in the new studios, fancy new office.
It's so good to have you, man. I really appreciate you. I know it's a crazy weekend ahead of next Tuesday's primary, and we got some important stuff that I know we definitely want to cover in the short time that we have. But before we do that, I have to ask you.
Oh, God.
I mean, you may have been asked this already, but
Jesus, boxers
and briefs? Remember this. What? We had a chance to work together, and I've always been honored and privileged to have shared that time with you, by the way. It was great. I always tell people it was the hardest job I ever had. It was the best job I ever had. When you started Santa Clara University on a baseball scholarship.
Partial little baby.
Did you know then what you wanted to be when you grew up? Did you see yourself as the 40th governor of state?
Oh, God, no. I mean, back then, and come on, I was just was a 960, 980 SAT guy. I was going to community college. Somehow I got lucky and got an opportunity on this partial scholarship to get into a four-year university. And then no sooner did that happen than I throw out my damn arm. And then it's, inspiration, desperation. I figure out what's going to happen the rest of my life. And I only say that in the context of your question is sports was my life back then.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think beyond that.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're sort of thrust into the different reality. And then that's when I started to grind a little bit, worked for an orthotics company to do deliveries, got my part-time real estate license, was just hustling, doing part-time things, and eventually landed on a small business that I started, put pen to paper. I got 13 plus investors, $7,500 each, opened a wine store and saw that grow and somehow ended up on the Parking and Traffic Commission.
Right.
Willie Brown appointed me to that at a relatively young age. I was in my 20s. And then, boom, I'm now into politics at the local level.
But you were a poli-sci major, if I remember that.
Yeah, right? I had a passion for all this stuff. That there's no doubt about that. But that was just like contemporary politics.
Yeah, totally.
And then they start doing political theory classes. I'm like, wait, I don't care about that. I care about what the heck is going on CNN. But at least directionally, I came from a family of mostly lawyers, but I wasn't going to get that through the LSAT probably. So I just had more of an entrepreneurial direction. And I tried to, no BS, I mean, and I think you appreciate this working with us, trying to take an entrepreneurial approach to solving vexing problems. And I think that often is missing in politics. Sometimes, and I don't mean this disparagingly, there is a more of a lawyerly approach to political process, not political problem solving. And so I'm willing to take risks. I'm willing to iterate. I'm open to argument, interested in evidence. I'm not an ideologue. I know some people think, he's from San Francisco. He's California. He's got to be an ideologue. I'm not.
I'm obviously got to see it up close and personal firsthand. I mean, it's part of your story that I know you talked about it. Somehow people aren't hearing it. They're not hearing the entrepreneur. They're not hearing the guy who runs the businesses.
No.
Who's tried and, not all of them successful.
No.
At least you have the modesty to admit when something doesn't go right. You learn from it. You move
on. Anyone who's been in the restaurant business understands that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I mean, some successful, some not. It's the ultimate privilege to be an entrepreneur, to be your own boss. I stopped working. Yeah. I worked for Walter Shorenstein downtown, 235 Montgomery Street in San Francisco. It was literally a 9-to-5 job doing property management. The day that I quit that job, not to disparage one of the great property managers in American history, the Shorenstein Company, but the day I quit that job was the last day I've ever worked.
Wow.
And having that entrepreneurial mindset and that energy and running restaurants, hotels, wineries, and then having the privilege of being able to run a city and now a state, a nation state. It may be a grind some days, but it's not work. It's passion.
Well, I've always appreciated the balance and thought you brought to even the decisions we had to make on bills.
Yeah.
Where I was with you, and it wasn't the cut and dried, like you said. You know, like, oh, this is the lane that we're in as Democrats or progressives or whatever. Which you've got those credentials, but you're also like, this just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, or what are we doing? How is this, you know, people got to run a business and do this. So how, you know, people, I just, you know, it's interesting to have seen that up close and, you know, hear the narrative. I get politics, but.
No, I mean, it's like, I always
bring that in.
A mantra mindset. I always had the business like mantra when I first got a parking and traffic commission. Then I went to the county board of supervisors as the small business owner that had deep understanding of the permitting problems because I had permitting problems, some of the payroll issues because I had payroll issues, trying to fill out the Board of Equalization forms. And I'm like, I don't understand these and, you know, worried that I'm going to get audited and did something wrong and fined. And I always said you can't be pro-job and anti-business. And I think for Democrats, we need to remind ourselves of that a little bit. At the same time, businesses can't thrive in a world that's failing either. So it's sort of a mantra of growth and inclusion.
Yeah.
But again, with a deep respect for risk takers, that's the greatness of America. That's the greatness of California, being on the leading and cutting edge, people putting everything on the line for riches and new beginnings. And that's something that's to me just precious.
Yeah.
And that should be celebrated.
Now it came through. It came through. So I got to ask you, you know, now you're in this job though, as governor of a fifth largest economy, depending on when you count.
I know. It was Germany, now Japan is falling back. It's interesting. They're all like bouncing around.
You're up there.
But we're like stalking them. We're stalking
them. That's right. But literally, I say literally from day one, it's been nonstop for you.
Man,
I mean, so you're elected on November 6, 2018. You were lieutenant governor at the time.
Yeah.
So you're governor-elect. Jerry Brown, former governor, goes out of town. You're both acting governor and governor-elect.
You got it.
The biggest wildfire in California's history breaks out that same week.
Yeah.
You had a mass shooting down in Thousand Oaks.
Thousand Oaks. And then there were some wildfires down here as well. And literally, talk about baptism by
fire.
Fire.
Yeah.
You know, gunfire and wildfire. Wow. Yeah. And it was a hell of a thing because a few weeks after that press conference, I'm sitting there in Marine One and Air Force One with then President Trump. We were kind of sparring partners a little bit during the campaign. I think in my inaugural address, I said we're the most un-Trump state in the country. And then all of a sudden, strangely, we started getting along.
Yeah.
And it was because of that sort of experience. And we were up in Northern California. We flew down to Southern California to see the fires here in L.A. And had an interesting working relationship throughout COVID. And I guess this is the point. Look, I just want to get back to just pragmatism.
Yep.
Not ideology.
Yep.
When you just live in the prison of ideology, you don't get anything done. You hold hands, talk about the way the world should be, but you're not iterating. You're not making it so. And so I'm for progress. And I'm also for, you know, respect, man. I mean, I respect the office of presidency. I don't like talking down to people or past people. As you say, I'll hold the line. I mean, I'm assertive in terms of advancing and fighting for my values and having the back of our diverse communities. And I'll take no back seat in terms of having the backs of particularly minorities and vulnerable communities. But, you know, I pride myself a little bit on that experience with Trump, particularly during COVID, of not just playing into the cynicism and the usual sort of punditry of left-right during that time. And I think California was a beneficiary because of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I happen to know, and you and I have talked about this some, you get a lot of inspiration from Robert Kennedy.
Oh, come on.
One of the challenges you faced in your time, obviously, was a recall, which you defeated pretty handily. I say it was the best poll you could have ever had. It was right before your
I do not recommend anyone recall.
Don't go through that.
I mean, that ain't some like political strategy. Though we did beat by 20 plus points.
Yeah.
But that was a hell of a thing. It was an off-year, off-month election. They tried to take me out.
Yep.
I had three elections last 4 years as a consequence. And, you know, they were ruthless. I mean, you know, I'm not, again, talking down. I'm being quite candid. The right came at me.
Yeah.
The RNC initiated. Yeah. They were one of the first checks in.
Yeah.
This guy, Newt Gingrich, was out there. Mike Huckabee. I don't know if that pillow guy, but I think it was just former Governor Huckey. He may have been on board. And these guys came, man. I mean, Fox was weaponizing it, and Newsmax and One American News, and kind of woke me up. It made me understand two things. One, the surround sound in terms of the anger machine that was coming to California. but it also sobered me up that politics has really become nationalist in a profound and consequential way.
Yep.
And the fact that we were able to defeat that, at the end of that, I was a totally different guy politically. Yeah. I just had a different mindset, different sense of urgency. I mean, when you could literally be removed from office in a humiliating way like that, that's not an enjoyable mindset to sort of work through that and persevere from it. So you come out a different person. Yeah. And interestingly, they just literally exact same people that we defeated before are now back at it. And they're attempting another recall effort. This time they have the database and they have the benefit of the last experience. So this is not going to end. As I say, there was a ruthlessness that persists today.
Part of it is the divisiveness and just kind of the nature of our politics, which you know better. But on the night that you won, you beat the recall. Yep. You invoked.
Oh yeah,
Bobby Kennedy. I don't know if we can. Do we have that? Let's check this out. I want to ask you about.
I don't know. A few decades ago, someone told me, when describing a difficult and challenging moment, said, "The world is too small, our time is too short, and our wisdom is too limited to win fleeting victories at other people's expenses." And he went on to say, "We must all triumph together." I just want to say this. Tonight, I'm humbled, grateful, but resolved in the spirit of my political hero, Robert Kennedy, to make more gentle the life of this world.
What is it about Kennedy that gives you so much inspiration?
I don't know. What I loved about him is there was a great sense of idealism, but hard-headed pragmatism. Yeah. It was both and, man.
Yeah.
And right now, it's usually one or the other. It's this whole binary. And, you know, either you're just an ideologue and you're just sort of idealistic and you don't have any capacity to deliver. But that pragmatism inspired me. And there was a language in the 60s, which I like, about addressing the issues of ignorance and poverty and disease.
Yeah.
And there was a spirit that we've lost in this country. And you can't legislate spirit.
Yeah.
And I thought it was lost with him. But I go back, it's like a Bible for me. Yeah. I mean, I have all the old original Bobby Kennedy speeches.
Yep.
And they're mesmerizingly great.
Yes.
They're not good. They're mesmerizingly great. And they enliven me and they distill a sense of well-being. And so try to share that sometimes. I mean, I was sincere about that night. You know, I tried to be gracious, and that was a hell of a 6 months. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't walk the streets. Yep. Your kids are getting harassed. Yep. Protests everywhere. Those signs, you know, "We're going to take you out." You know, it's sad. I mean, our politics has become even more coarse than it was two years ago. And people feel free to shove publicly, no longer just privately expressing themselves in ways that I'm honestly not used to. And I've been on the leading edge of a lot of controversial policy making, but the personalization of the grievance is next level nowadays. It's different.
Well, you take all that, but you still focus. And I want to give you a sec to talk about Prop 1.
Yeah.
We'll close with that, because that is an indication of all those hits you take. Somehow you still stand there and be focused on what needs to get done. And this is an example of that.
Well, I mean, in the spirit of Bobby Kennedy, my why, it's sort of like fanciful, but like 15 years ago, I really thought long and hard, what's my why? Why am I here? Why am I here as a son at the time and a brother and a small business person and then working in public service and now as governor, is to stand up for ideals and strike out against injustice. And you look at the injustices that are perpetuated here as it relates to the issue of poverty. And there's no other state that can lay claim to this level of poverty. And so it's, the original sin in California is affordability. And the ultimate byproduct of that is homelessness. And it's been that way for decades and decades. When I was mayor, we had the highest homeless count in California history in 2005. Remember, it was even higher than it is today. What's changed, though, today is the street population. And more chronic single adults, people self-medicating with drug or alcohol addictions, people that are in desperate need of housing, and they're living disproportionately now, a lot of them at least intense and on the sidewalks. And the drug issues are even more insidious. I mean, the fentanyl and the trank, which is the xylazine, you're starting to see a lot on the East Coast now coming out on the West Coast, taking so many lives. And so we have to do things differently. We have to disabuse ourselves that we continue down this path. And we, in psychology, need to do the proverbial pattern interrupt. We got to scratch the old record player. Yeah. A few of us are old enough to know what the hell record player is. And so that's what this initiative is about. It's about being bold. It's going at scale in addressing a 50-year process of deinstitutionalization. And just briefly on that, some people know that Ronald Reagan was Governor Ronald Reagan before he was President Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. And he was part of a bipartisan effort, not a cheap shot. It's an interesting fact that really began the process in California of deinstitutionalizing our state hospitals, our mental health institutions. In the 60s, we had 37,000 psychiatric beds with 16 million population. Today, we have close to 40 million population and just 5,500 beds. It's not unique to California, but it was disproportionate here in many respects. It's led to a lot of the chronic conditions we that see today that just are inexplicable. Like, what is it? Going on? Affordability, obviously, is the top of mind issue, but it also is what's happening, particularly with mental health. We did a Mental Health Service Act reform, or rather, we advanced Mental Health Service Act about 20 plus years ago, but for a world that no longer exists. It didn't include substance abuse. It didn't include housing. And you know, the reality is people are self-medicating today disproportionately, and they're chronic, and they're and disproportionate number of living in those encampments are single adults that don't have access to housing. And without that stability of housing, how are you going to deal with the underlying issues in the first place? So this is one of the biggest reforms in U.S. history. It's not a tax increase, Proposition 1, though there is a bond component the state general fund absorbs that is a parallel commitment of $6.38 billion to develop 11,150 new treatment beds and 26,700 treatment slots. We're going big and bold with siting and permitting reform, with new accountability, new requirements on the cities and counties. We want money to be spent wisely. If it's not being spent wisely, we'll pull the money, workforce commitment, and it's to fulfill the original vision that was never realized in the 60s, and to right this wrong and to address the issue that defines more grievance on more days and more ways for more Californians. And that's the issue of homelessness and quality of life. And that's not just here in LA, that's in rural parts of California and increasingly all across America.
No, 100%.
And so this is a big, bold idea. And this, you know, is one of those things, man, this is like one of those Vegas moments. Like, I'm just like, put it all out there. In this case, I won't say it's red or black, it's blue.
There you go.
You know, and we're hoping we pull this damn thing off next week.
I love it. Well, we're proud Californians to have you, and we know what starts in California hopefully spreads across the rest of the country
and takes all the good and the bad. So
the good and the bad, the good and the bad. But in this case, it's a new focus on what I think a lot of communities across the country are experiencing, and you're leading the way.
The unity and agenda. If there was one issue that should unite Americans, it's got to be this, man, mental health and the people struggling, suffering, social isolation. This initiative is also about you. It's about them. It's not just about what's happening in the streets and sidewalks. And it really, the bright light was shown during the pandemic on the issue of behavioral health, and it fell most acutely on our youth. And so a huge component of this as well is focusing on treating brain health early before we punish it later, humanizing this issue and allowing people more confidence and comfort of being more honest about their own lived experiences.
Love it. Thank you, Governor. Thank you, man. Coming in. Good to see you, brother. Appreciate it, man. Thank you. All right.
13th and Park is thrilled to welcome a second home to our family, the state of California, with the opening of our new studio in Hollywood, where we'll continue to share the biggest stories of the day and those behind them. Subscribe today for free to 13th and Park's YouTube channel so you never miss another episode.